Five, four, three, two, one.
Third degree burn is go.
Good morning, sir.
Tell me, what day is it?
What day?
Christmas!
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all.
Hello and welcome to a brand new, spanking new episode of Third Degree Burn. And this is our Christmas episode that we're recording within the week prior to the holiday. We have a special theme for you tonight where we're going to be taking a look at a number of the most memorable or best John Byrne single issues, that is, done-in-one stories that he has done over his entire career. Some of us have lists, some of us have done this before, and some of us are unprepared. So I'm Kirk Greenfield, I'm your host. Or you're at least your introducing host. We also have Tim Elliott.
Hello.
And we have Nigel Swink.
Hello.
And there's a possibility that Brian Hughes may be joining us. He's currently caught in traffic, holiday traffic, but we'll see if he is able to show up a little bit later on. But you have at least the three of us for as long as this takes to go through our lists. Anybody have any John Byrne news to share, even though it's a holiday?
I don't. I haven't been really. I leave that up to Brian. I have not been kind of. I've been so busy with work and the holidays. I have not really had to peruse his. Nothing's popped up on my radar that I can think of.
I saw something interesting. It's not current, but there was a discussion on one of the Facebook pages where they were saying just after the death of Phoenix from 137. In 138, there's a retrospective of the entire history of the X-Men as Cyclops prepares to leave the team, and he does. There's an interesting comment that says, boy, is this ever a downer? You know, this is a really dark, pessimistic view of things as he prepares to leave. It's virtually all flashback. And the comment was made saying, if Byrne was going to leave, and he leaves the series after, 143? What would have happened had he left now or at 138? How would things have been different? And that got me to thinking a little bit. That means no Days of Future Past. That means no X-Men Elsewhere. That means it's not Freedom Force. What's the name of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants? None of that would come together under Raven Darkholm or Mystique. And there would be no second appearance of Alpha Flight. Maybe it would have happened. Who knows? Somebody else could have drawn it. But I'm just saying, think of what we take as history and that seeded the future. All that potentially could have been erased had he just decided earlier, and I'm not saying he should have, but if he had decided that's it, I'm done, shooters screwed us up, I'm out of here. If he had done that at 138, boy, would it ever have changed the landscape for at least the mutants. I thought it was a really off-the-wall comment that made me think quite a bit about it.
That's interesting, because I wonder if Alpha Flight would have gone forward, because if you didn't have that second appearance to kind of solidify their popularity to the point where they were telling Byrne that, we're going to do this book, whether you do it or not. And he said, well, if you're going to do it, I might as well do it.
Right.
The Days of Future Past, I don't know. Is that solely his idea? Is he?
I don't know. I don't know enough of that. I'm sure Brian has an opinion on this because he's studied this much closer than I have. I suspect it was a combination of both, but I really got the impression that it might have been Burns' baby because, well, I don't know. It's just a gut feeling that it's more his than Claremont's.
I think he wanted to do it. Right. I think he's admitted that he kind of was inspired. I'm not saying he borrowed it, but he was inspired by a third Doctor story called The Day of the Dalek. Where in that, if I'm getting that, somebody's telling me right now as they're listening that I'm getting that wrong. But it's a story in that where somebody comes back in time to assassinate a key figure that they feel would then not have the future go down this bad path. So I think he kind of used that for inspiration. So it's possibly that maybe that was the whole germ of that story was his idea. And he just had Claremont help him flesh it out. So you know, that may have never come to pass then, unless
quite possibly. I've heard the name of that show before, and I didn't realize what the content was. But if you're talking the third Doctor, you're talking about what? John Pertwee.
Pertwee.
And so we're talking what? The late 60s.
Yeah, early 70s.
Yeah, late John, 60s, he's like 70 70s. To 74. So it would have been probably 72, 73.
So that would have been the time period when I was in high school in the U.S. and Doctor Who really had not exploded onto the popular culture scene here. So it would have been Burns, you know, with his background from Canada and maybe some English influence there. I can see very easily where it would be his. Now I want to dig it up and I want to watch it because I don't know where you find it, but really interested to see it. How many episodes last?
It's that story is, I think. It's a four series. Yeah.
Kind of remember that one.
Introduced the Ogrons, if you know who those are, Nigel.
Ogrons.
They look kind of like vague.
I don't.
Planet of the Apes, kind of Neanderthal looking.
Ogrons. Yeah. I remember another race that were in a Dalek story called the Draconians.
Yeah, that's Frontier Space.
I thought they were in the same one actually as well. I can't remember the whole plot, but I remember. Yeah, because during Pertwee's run. He was kind of he was restricted to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't go anywhere else for a long time. Anyway, something to do with the Time Lords had put some kind of restriction on him. Most of the stories, well, that I remember anyway, they all take place on Earth. Yeah, including this one, I think, where the Daleks came.
It was mostly because. This was January 72.
Yeah.
So
I have to ask, it is a spoiler. I want to ask how it resolves. Does it resolve similar to what we saw unfold in the X-Men, or is it radically different?
I think it does. I haven't seen it in a while, so I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you're not going to like my answer, which is, I can't remember.
Okay, well, I'll do some research on my own then. I don't mean to sidetrack us too badly on this.
You can watch that. I don't know where you can watch it on BritBox. I think they have it. Or you can watch YouTube probably. It's worth watching. And being Canadian, I'm sure it was shown more heavily in rotation in Canada than it was in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Because in the U.S. it didn't take off until Tom Baker. They started showing his stuff on PBS.
UHF TV.
Yeah, Channel 13 for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the Detroit area, Channel 9, made famous in that Michael Jackson song, Thriller, Channel 9 was, I believe, from Windsor, Ontario, and Channel, I want to say 62, way up on the UHF band, was a low-power Detroit station that was minority-run, and that's where Doctor Who was. So I would occasionally stumble onto Tom Baker doing something weird in this soap opera called Doctor Who. And I never watched an entire episode, but I was just aware that this was kind of relegated to the back burner, so to speak, of popular culture. And I couldn't see it clearly because it was full of static. It was, you know, 70 miles or better, 90 miles from Detroit to my house. It was just too far away. It was full of snow. You could barely make out that anything was there. And this is well before cable TV or other distribution systems. So that's
well, nice, my knowledge of it. The nice thing when it was, I used to watch it in Texas, they would show it. And unlike, and you can correct me this, Nigel, when they repeated it in the UK, they probably just showed an episode at a time, the way it was broadcast originally.
Yeah.
When we showed it, it was always came on Saturday night, 10 o'clock. They would show all the episodes together. So we got to see it in one long span.
How long were the episodes? Half hour?
Half an hour. It was every Saturday at 5 o'clock or 5:30, I think. Yeah.
So you could sit for 2 hours and get the entire four-part episode. Basically a movie.
Yeah. Or if it was a six-parter, you would get, it'd be an hour, it'd be almost 2 hours. Or some of the Patrick Troughton, in fact, his final episode was 12 episodes. Some of the others were long. Some of those were 10 episodes.
Yeah, there were some long ones.
Yep. But we digress. well, I'm going to make a little caveat on my list, Kirk, because mine are not necessarily standalone stories, but they are my favorite single issues. It might be part two or part one or part three. I didn't know we were doing just one and done. So mine are just memorable.
We don't have to do that.
Single, yeah, right.
We're flexible. Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Why don't you go first then, Tim?
Okay, I will go first. And mine are not in any particular order. It's just five of them, and there's not like one through five. So my first one, and I probably have listed this several times on my list, is Superman number 22, The Price. And if you're familiar with that one, that's the I don't know what it's called, but it's when he goes to like alternate Earth and he finds the Kryptonian supervillains, that this is the Earth where Lex Luthor is a good guy, and the Phantom Zone villains have somehow escaped. They made it to that Earth. It's Zod, Ursa, and I can't remember the guy's name. He looks like Non, but he's not mute the way he was in the movie. And they destroy, spoilers for 40-year-old. Well, if you haven't read it, I don't want to ruin it. If you really haven't read it, it's a great story.
The only thing I know about it is I've seen the cover. It's a green cover, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With like a guy with a hood on.
Yeah, I thought that was the next one.
No, this is
that's 20 last one that Byrne drew, isn't it?
Exactly. It's his final episode of Superman. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a three-part issue.
Spoil it. We can safely spoil it then, since we all know what the payoff is.
Byrne leaves at the end. Yeah.
Byrne leaves. Yeah. I don't want to. If Nigel, you really haven't read it, it's a great story.
I haven't
story.
Read that one, no. Because were you just saying it's the last part of a three-part story?
Well, it's a three-one, yeah. It's issue, I guess.
Because it's connected to a Supergirl thing, I believe, is it not?
It's when she shows up in his run. He creates her. So, But I think it's all in Superman. It doesn't, you know, he was doing Superman and Adventures of Superman, but this is all
his artwork. This is all in the one title, yeah.
Yeah. So it's worth reading.
It's on my list 21, to try 22. And get.
And it's some, you know, and it was kind of a controversial issue because of some things that happened in it. Artwork is great. It's got some heady ideas. It's always a final issue that I would revisit. Because it's got a lot of action in it. It's got a lot of some great Superman episode, or just some great moments for him as a character, right, and some of the stuff he does. So
mm-hmm.
that's my number one or number five.
First entry.
It's my first entry. Exactly. My first one.
Nigel, yeah. Do you want to share one of yours next?
Okay, yeah. Well, I have them in an order, but it's not an order of preference. It's more an order of when they first came out. And the first one I'm going to talk about, it's appropriately a Christmas one as well. It is Marvel Team Up number 79, featuring Spider-Man and Red Sonja.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure, yeah, you'll probably remember this one, yeah. This was a good story. As I say, a done in one. A little bit different in that they were bringing in somebody from the Hyborian Age, in the case of Red Sonja. It's like, how's that going to work? But, yeah, they were doing it through sorcery, of course, because the villain was
Ghulan Garth.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And does Ren Sonja not reveal herself or resolve herself to be a possessed Mary Jane at the end, much to Spider-Man's surprise?
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen that page just recently.
It's not, well, it might be, yeah, it's a surprise to him, I guess. We sort of know earlier in the story because, she picks up an enchanted sword, basically, and that's when she sort of switches places, if you like, or becomes overtaken by Red Sonja.
Mm.
And there's a fabulous full-page picture, I don't know whether you remember that, of when she first changes and Spidey's being grabbed by these bad creatures, and she comes charging to the rescue.
Oh, is that when she's kind of leaping at the page?
An impressive, page. Yeah, she's sort of leaping forward with her arm, ready to slash the sword down and chop this, like, serpent thing's head off and help Spidey to escape. Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps we'll be able to share that on the Facebook page for those of us who don't have it.
Yeah.
A pinup, if you will.
Yeah, it is kind of a... I have that issue, yeah, but I don't think I've read it. So I'm about to put that on my list.
What?
Well, there's a lot of...
I have these issues, but I've never read them. I'm like, what?
Well, I've collected a lot of...
Why bother?
I was collecting... Well, I was trying to collect all of Marvel Team-Up because I'm a Spider-Man fan.
Yeah.
But it's... Or I've thumbed through it, and I haven't read it enough that it's kind of stuck in my memory.
Mm. But yeah, it's... It's a good done in one story. It's enjoyable. Yeah. Actually, it's, for me, it's kind of, it's over too soon. I always wish it had gone on a bit longer. You know, they ought to have made it a special or something, or like an annual size, or at least add a few more pages to it. Because it's rolling along nicely, and then it seems like, oh, we're running out of pages, let's wrap it up, kind of thing. And next minute, it's over. Yeah.
So it doesn't carry over. I know a lot of times with
it's a one and done.
Yeah, a lot of Marvel team ups will kind of hand off from one hero to another hero
to the next one. No, that was it. Because as well, I think this was the last one that Byrne did.
The last time it was Byrne and Claremont. Well, he wrote the next one. He wrote issue 80.
Oh, yeah, Claremont.
But he didn't draw it. Yeah.
But Byrne stopped drawing them regularly after that.
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah, that's always a good one for a one and done story if you just want something quick to read and it's good and it's got action. Yeah.
I might put some, what I'll do is when I, to Kirk's suggestion, I'll put some maybe pinups of the issues we talk about on Facebook before it gets posted.
Yeah.
Pinup, or maybe just at least the cover if there's not a pinup. and I use the term pinup very euphemistically. I've not prepared a list, but as I'm thinking through things in my head, I'm going to share one, Alpha Flight number 12, which is part of an ongoing tale, but it delivers a sucker punch, a gut punch. And that has occurred to me. I don't think it's any surprise to say it's the surprise death of Guardian. After only 12 issues of their own series, it's double-sized. It reveals the villainy of, I can't think of the villain's name. He's in a wheelchair.
Jackson.
Jerry Jackson, I think.
And I believe also Courtney Delphine, or the robot, is revealed in that to be manipulating just a whole lot. At any rate, the point, I think the artwork's great. I think the tale is really good. It builds to a frightening climax that will shatter the status quo and is a pivot point. You can debate whether or not it should have happened, but you can't argue about the fact that the book basically changes its I almost said format. That's not quite true. It changes its direction as it has lost its head. So that's my nomination. That's at least one that has occurred to me. And even as I've been describing this, another one has popped into my head. And I'll bet you guys are going to get that one. So let's go for another round here, Tim.
Okay. My next issue is, and I think this has been on one of my lists before, Incredible Hulk number 316, Battleground. Now, this is the one where the Hulk, the mindless Hulk, this is after Banner and the Hulk have been separated. And the Hulk is just rampaging through, I think it's New Mexico.
Yeah,
and the Avengers show up, which is Iron Man, Namor, Hercules, and Wonder Man, to try to stop him. And I think what's great about the issue is, one, the artwork is beautiful, and you get this all-out brawl with some of the most powerful guys in Marvel, and you get to see just how strong and powerful the Hulk is, because he just kind of wipes the floor with them, and they just devastate a town. And that's where Doc Samson comes in. That's where he kind of comes in and says, look, I'm the one, because this is after he is released. In the previous issue, he released the Hulk because they had the Hulk kind of sedated, and they were going to take him for experiments or something. And he thought that they shouldn't do that. So he breaks into this special truck they've got him in, and he releases the Hulk. And then he doesn't realize that without Bruce Banner there, the Hulk is just a mindless savage and just devastates whatever's in his path. He's like a force of nature. And so he feels responsible for getting him back. So he kind of comes in and says, I'm the best person to bring the Hulk in. And they're like, well, no, you can't. And he's like, well, look around you. Look what you guys have done. And Burns got this great image of just the town is just flattened because of the damage from the Hulk and them trying to subdue him. So it's just a good knock. And it also deals with the Banner is in the hospital. And he's, I think, dying because he can't. I guess they can't live without each other.
Yes, it's a very good one. As you say, it's great artwork, massive fight between all these super guys and Hulk. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah,
It's all the heavy hitters from the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah. Both Avengers teams, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nigel, do you want to go with one?
Yes, okay, my second one. And I'll get in before Brian comes in if he is going to join us, because I think he would have chosen this one as well. and that's Marvel 2-in-1 number 50, The Thing Battles The Thing.
I guess.
That is a great.
It's the one where, it's by Byrne, and Joe Sinnott was the inker on this particular one. I like Sinnott on Byrne art, And yeah, it's where Reed's trying to find out how to cure Ben, of course, as he does every so often. And he's studying how Ben's changed over the years and saying that something that he could have created a few years ago that would have worked and changed him back, it won't work now. But he says it would have worked when you were, you know, when in your earlier years of the thing.
This kind of dinosaur hide thing.
Yeah, so Thing gets this idea in his head that if he goes back in time using the Doom's time machine that they've got stored in the FF building, he could perhaps give it to himself and, you know, that will cure him. So, of course, yeah, he goes back and he meets himself. And they have, yeah, and it's another glorious slugfest. It's another big battle. You know, they face one another and start beating hell out of each other and ripping the place apart. Yeah. And then the Thing kind of loses it. He's kind of pulling his punches, of course, because he's hitting himself.
Kill himself, exactly.
So he sort of eases off, but then the younger Thing is like, is overpowering him, and Thing loses his temper, and he just about does get to the point where he's killing himself, and then he realizes, what am I doing, sort of thing. So anyway, he manages to knock himself out, his younger self, and then he gives him the potion that Reed had created, and of course it does work, and he turns back to Ben Grimm. So then Ben goes back on the time machine, thinking when he gets back, he'll be Ben Grimm. And of course, that's when Reed tells him, "Why time travel? It doesn't work like that."
Yeah.
So he's like, "Oh, damn it!" He's still, he's still the Thing, and he's
cured
just,
one guy.
He's created an alternate reality where he will remain Ben Grimm. Yeah, but yeah, that's a very good, that's a really good done in one story. And yeah, it's a special as well, with it being the 50th issue. Well, I guess it had to be something like that, the Thing against the Thing. And
yeah. Do you think this is kind of Byrne's homage to, is it FF50, This Man, This Monster?
Where, 51.
Is it 51? Okay. Similar stories.
It could be. I'd never thought about that.
I call it an homage, but
no, well, in FF51, it's...
Yeah, I think it's just more, it's more of a... Because at the end, ultimately, he doesn't cure himself, and he's kind of stuck as is.
Well, this sort of a turn of events with time travel has happened before. If you look back to FF21 with the first Rama Tut, when the FF go back to get a cure for Alicia's blindness, and they have their adventure, and they get back in the time machine, and they come forward on the platform, and they're like, oh no, and they should have thought of this. And Reed says, nothing radioactive can transport through the time platform. Did all this for nothing. So that's sort of a bittersweet twist at the end. There's history in that.
That means what I'm, I guess what I'm thinking about it being kind of, to your point, bittersweet, that it is, that's the kind of the Thing's lot in life, that is, he can never. And when was, and this is probably for you, Kirk, because you're our FF scholar. When did they establish, or did they at one point they establish that the Thing could have always changed back, but he has some kind of psychological block that wouldn't allow him?
Well,
is that it?
I believe that was a Byrne innovation. That was after he split off from the FF and went on his rocky, grim space wrestler adventure in his own title, The Thing. That when you know, some place along that. He either discovers it, but Reed confirms it. It's like, yeah, I've known for some period of time that you've always had the ability, but the block has always been in your head. That's why all these various cures
don't work.
Sometimes worked and sometimes didn't, depending on what your mood was. But we went through all kinds of, jumped through all kinds of hoops, but the block has always been right there, but you had to come to grips with it yourself. And now that you have the ability. I think that's a John Byrne plot thread.
Yeah, sure. I agree.
Because it's on Battleworld, right? He stayed on Battleworld because he could change.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. It's a mental thing.
But then he also believed that if he could change back, that Alicia would not be in love with him because
that they've played with over the years, depending on which month it is, which. I almost said, which writer, you know,
just
flops. I do want to be the thing. No, I don't want to be the thing. Oh, Alicia will love me. No, Alicia won't love me. And it's like, just all over the, whatever they needed a bot for next month. You know, they just changed his attitude to match.
All right, Kirk, I think you're up.
Okay. I'm going to give you an obvious one. I was going to hold this for the last, but since nobody else has mentioned it, I'm going to say the X-Men 143 was the night before Christmas with Kitty Pryde versus the demon, or the alien, if you want to squint just a little bit, because clearly that one shot.
You don't have to squint very much to see the alien in there.
Yeah.
It's a holiday episode. It's done in one. It's self-contained. It has its own unique charm. It establishes Kitty as a real resourceful scrapper. You're on the edge of your seat right up to the very end. I think it's very well done, and so that's my nomination.
Yeah. And if you want to hear more coverage on it, check out our episode 33, where we covered the same issue.
Yeah. And that's the first one of mine to be repeated.
Well done,
Kirk. That was coming up next, but never mind. I shall shunt in a substitute after. Yes, it's a good, dunning one, as you say. It's basically the alien story. Artwork's brill. It's another Christmas story as well.
That's why we covered it. Yeah,
yeah, a good one to read at this time of year. Mm. Yeah.
That's why I just reposted it. On Facebook, right.
So
15 minutes before we get on this call. Mm-hmm. Okay, my next one is Fantastic Four 267, A Small Loss. Now, this is a very iconic cover, and I've actually covered this on Storytime. Is the where Susan Richards is in the hospital, she's having trouble with their second baby, and because I think the radiation from the baby is harming her. Something to do with radiation. I've read this, but I can't remember now. So Richards calls upon Doc Ock, who's like an expert in radiation, to come and help. But his arms, who are being held, escape because I guess the doc is out, and they rampage through the city, and it's a fight between just the mechanical arms and Reed Richards. And the cover is fantastic because you see Richards kind of stretched in all different directions over the city, and the arms are in there grabbing him. And it has it has a very sad ending because, spoilers, they go through all this, and finally Richards basically is appealing to, and you get to see kind of Doc Ock in a little different light, because he's like, hey, I need your help. You know, you're an expert in this. I need your help. And Doc is willing to help. But at that time, the doctor comes out and says, your wife's okay, but we lost the baby. And that's how it ends. So that baby is later retconned to be what's her name? She comes back.
Valeria.
That baby comes back in some timey-wimey type of thing. But yeah, the gut punch is right, Kirk. I mean, because this has all been going on. I think it's because she conceived in the negative zone. And I think that had something to do with the reason why they were having trouble. It was a difficult pregnancy. And then, I mean, that's the kind of stuff you didn't see in comics, you know, to have somebody miscarriage. That's just, it's just exactly just a.
Byrne, in retrospect, went to great lengths to establish that they were taking an adventure in the negative zone. You didn't see this coming, but it's very clear in hindsight that he was setting this up right from that point with the intent that Sue was going to be pregnant. Yep. And that this was going to be, if you want to call it an homage, this is an homage to FF6 with the birth of Franklin. I'm not sure that I'd use that term, but there's a parallel there. Anything else, or Nigel?
FF Annual 6, you mean? Yeah.
Yes.
FF Annuals. You just said FF6, and I'm thinking Dr. Doom and Submariner.
Sorry, you're correct. Yeah. Annual 6. Sorry.
Yeah. I was just going to say, as you say, it's a gut punch of an ending, and it's another first, really, and like with the Fantastic Four, they kind of used that for firsts, didn't they? Because they were the first couple to get married, and then the first super couple to have a child.
Yes.
And so it was all, you know, pretty much another first that she would have this unfortunate loss of a child. Yeah. And I think it was a mistake to then later bring this child.
Oh, absolutely. Back.
I wasn't reading it by then, so, you know, I just choose to ignore the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, you don't have a powerful story like that and then later down the road just ruin it.
Just undo it. Exactly.
Yeah, but they do that all the time, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but yes, it's a good issue. Yeah, very good.
All right, Nigel, what's your alternative since you duplicated one?
My next one then, well, my number four now moving into the number three slot. It's Fantastic Four again. It's Fantastic Four 233, Mission for a Dead Man. It's kind of a solo adventure for the Torch, for Johnny Storm. He has to investigate. Someone he knew when he was young, from his school days, bit of a bad boy. The story starts with this guy being sentenced to death, and he's electrocuted in the prison. And he leaves a note for the father, and it's addressed to Johnny, and it's asking Johnny Storm to investigate his. What happened, because he says that he didn't actually kill the person that he was convicted of. He admitted to robbing a store, but not killing the store owner, because the store owner died, you see. So the Torch has to follow up different leads and try and find out what happened, basically. So it's like a whodunit with Johnny as the... detective. And of course he's not exactly a great detective, is he, at this time? So so he makes mistakes.
Well, it's got Hammerhead in it, right?
There's a few good throwbacks to like earlier FF. In there's a bit where the father first visits the Baxter building, and you get all the business about how he gets up to the top there with their special elevator and everything. And then when he arrives, the Torch and the Thing are having one of their famous, you know, scraps, fallouts, because the Torch has been taunting Ben. So Ben's going crazy, throwing furniture and stuff around and trying to get the Torch, and then he blasts him with a water pipe. And so they have to get hold of Ben and calm him down. Then he storms off. So there's all that, just like in the older FF stories or in the Strange Tales stories, which this really becomes, because it's all about just the torch investigating this murder.
Yeah, which it does have kind of a Strange Tales feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. He makes a few mistakes along the way, because he goes into the store for a look around, and he asks the guy if he can have a look around, which he says he can, but he looks into this back room, and the guy doesn't like him doing that. And he tells him to get out, and he says, in fact, I don't think you're the Human Torch at all, because, you know, you could be anybody. And, of course, Johnny then flames on. right next to sort of like some highly combustible things. And then, so when he leaves, he thinks, whoops, that was a bit of a bad thing to do. I could have had the whole place up in flames, you know.
Yeah.
And he keeps making little mistakes like that. But then eventually he gets onto the idea of what's happening. And his different leads connect him to the underworld, of course, which is where he visits this gang leader who turns out to be Hammerhead from Spider-Man. And they have a bit of a tussle, which is good. And Hammerhead's kind of, he's got this like skeletal,
exoskeleton. Well, he's got like an exoskeleton, like a power suit or something, yeah. Doesn't he?
Yeah, so that's giving him more strength than that, because Johnny almost, yeah, he thinks he's going to beat him easily because, oh, it's only Hammerhead kind of thing. And Hammerhead nearly beats him too much. He's giving him a rough time, but he manages to disable the pack on the back of this exoskeleton. And then Hammerhead gets away. But it's not really about Hammerhead with regard to the murder. And then in the end, yeah, he solves the case. And that's it. Yeah. So it's a nice little done in one torch detective story.
Yeah.
And that was one of Byrne's early, well, it's his second issue when he took over the Fantastic Four. And yeah. I think that's what he was aiming for, a kind of a Strange Tales story, because the torch originally got his stories in Strange Tales. I think it was within a year of the Fantastic Four title coming out, so fairly quickly. And so, you know, Byrne's just repeating that. He started the FF the month before, and now he puts him in an individual story. So
right.
I think that's an enjoyable read.
It's a good issue. Okay, Kirk, you're on deck.
Ah. That may have...
Uh-oh.
Did we may have lost the... Kirk altogether now.
Oh, maybe that's why we don't
Am
hear
I out?
No, no. We can hear you now.
Oh. Yep. Nothing is changing. Nothing's moving. I don't know what to tell you guys.
I don't know.
My selection that I'm offering you is Namor number... I think it's 17, but it's the big reveal in the Savage Land that Iron Fist has been impersonated by the Super Skrull. I really like this, not only because of the ongoing serial nature of Namor. It's great artwork. It was a pretty good little mystery. You were on the edge of your seat every issue as it advanced and dropped a few more clues. Nobody got the answer, as far as I know, until that issue when it was, you know, revealed that he was demonstrating all the powers of the Fantastic Four. So that's my nomination.
It's a good.
I think it was brilliant, but it's part of a continued story. So
true.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll say we covered this, both of you and I, and I think when we covered we wrote down the clues, because if you go back and reread it, you can find all the clues that Byrne peppered in.
Right.
That this is that, like, he's punching somebody from behind a rock, or he's doing stuff like that. Or he's using his hypnotism on people. So I think we listed that when we covered our, I don't remember what episode it was, but we covered all of them the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You got any comments on that one?
Yeah, it is a good issue. As you say, you covered it when you did the name or run. As I say, I agree with Kirk about the artwork is great, and it was a good reveal.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say about? Oh, is that the same issue as we find out what happens to, what's his name?
Iron Fist?
Meacham, is it?
Meacham gets his reveal or his comeuppance in the next issue.
Yeah. Oh, the next issue. Right. Okay. Yeah. I'll not say anything
but
more about
it. The road.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that was kind of ironic. Yeah. Yeah, what he'd been promised, and yeah, that was good. Yep. But yeah, it's a good part of the story, that, yeah, where everything starts to be revealed, and it's the Super Skrull and everything.
Well, and
I agree.
I think in my research when I was doing that, because there's a kind of a convoluted reason why the Super Skrull had come back, and somebody. Because Byrne had dealt with that in Alpha Flight number 10, where he fights Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, yeah.
So this is kind of a direct link to that. And somebody brought him back earlier. Byrne didn't like that. So there's a whole article about how he came back and he goes back and he's Byrne was kind of referencing his own story.
Oh yeah, I believe he appeared in a Silver Surfer annual, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it's that Byrne didn't like.
He didn't like him. Yeah. Because he was stuck in the...
Yeah, he was stuck in the Van Allen belt. Yeah.
Yep. All right, I'll go next. My number four.
Four.
This is probably the one that will be kind of a no-brainer. But I've covered this one too in story time. It's Uncanny X-Men 133, Wolverine Alone. And this just has a special place in my heart because I had the Dark Phoenix. When I first started collecting comics, I had the Dark Phoenix trade paperback, which collected all the issues leading up to and through the Dark Phoenix. And I've always loved this issue because, one, it's the first one that kind of gives you an idea of what Wolverine can do. So it's him, you know, after he's been dumped into the sewer, and you get that image that you see of him looking up through the, he's all covered in muck and stuff, and he says, "Okay, bub, now it's my turn," or something like that. And this is just him tearing through a bunch of these nameless guards that are employed by the Hellfire Club, and it's just the artwork's great, and then the story's great because it just gives you more an idea of how lethal Wolverine is. So that's why I picked it.
I agree.
Yeah.
And Brian is going to be so upset.
The what?
Because he wanted to present that one.
Oh, probably.
I hear him now.
No.
All right.
back to you, one, Nigel. Huh? Yeah, you're number four.
Yeah. That was short and sweet. I was going to say,
it's a good one. Wolverine.
The Wolverine one, yeah. It's good. That's the first time. I was never a big fan of Wolverine, but that's where, as I'd often said, though, that's where you appreciate him on your team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. he was good to be on your side rather than against you, yeah. And he proves it in that episode, yeah. Yeah. Okay, my next one then is Superman number 7. I don't know whether you remember this at all. Where he... it starts with a sort of... Is it an experiment? Not so much an experiment, but oh yeah, somebody's... Lois Lane is being shown around the... Is it the Star Labs? Where they do all these different scientific, this is Rampage, yeah. And something happens in the laboratory and there's an explosion they have to get everybody out. But some people have got caught in the explosion Superman, well, Superman gets an idea of what's happening because he sees the flames and that with his X-ray vision from his office where he is. So he goes to investigate. Yeah. And, oh, first he has to get rid of the core of this thing, I think. Oh, no, no. I tell a lie. I'm looking through it while I'm talking to you, see? He's looking to make sure everybody's got out, and then there's an energy bubble, that's right. But it discharges itself into the ground, and then while he's moving rubble and stuff, he suddenly gets attacked. Yeah, this huge kind of like Femizon appears from under the rubble.
She's like orange.
Yeah.
She is orange, yeah.
She's orange. She's like a cross between, yeah, She-Hulk and, I don't know who, somebody who's with a mohawk.
Who's the Teen Titans girl that's orange with purple hair?
Oh, Starfire. Yeah, but she's a lot prettier than this one. anyway, and then, but she seems to be like a bit wild like the Hulk. She's not talking because Superman tries to approach her with a hello and I'm Superman, and she smashes him across the way. And every time he tries to interrupt her, she just keeps attacking him. And he thinks it's Lois Lane because some guy says that she didn't get out. One of the other people who he finds, one of the survivors, he says, that monster, it's got to be Lois Lane. So then Superman thinks, oh no, it's Lois. So he's got to try and save her and stop her, but at the same time, he doesn't want to hurt her. And she can fly as well. She has the power of flight. He tries to save her, but he's having a really bad time about it.
Doesn't her skin burning when he touches her or grabs her? Doesn't her skin...
He grabbed her there, but no, he seems to have got hold of her. Okay. Oh, yeah, he says his hands are burning. Yeah, don't know how much longer he can hold on. Yeah, so she must have an effect on him that way. Yeah.
Well, and he soaks up all her energy. Her. Yeah.
And then she's crushing him into the floor. She's got his. She's got her foot on his head.
They were wearing chainmail body suits as protective. Yeah, and so she's wearing protection. It's ripped up.
She's got the remains of the chainmail bodysuit on. Yeah.
So it's kind of Red Sonja-like, I thought.
Yeah. And then whilst this is all going on, while they're fighting, the police are called in and they bring a special weapon, which they fire at her, like a bazooka thing, which... staggers her a bit, but she's still going. And she comes back and gives Superman a bit more trouble. But then he realizes, that she's kind of like supercharged, but if he can sort of absorb her power without it killing him, it will weaken her, which he does. He just goes for that. He lets her get hold of him and he just acts like a sponge and takes all her power within him till he's glowing, and then she changes back, and then he has to race up into space to discharge all this powerful extra energy.
Throw it in the sun.
he just gets into space and then lets it go, and then it turns out, of course, it wasn't Lois either, because while he's fighting, Lois suddenly appears on the scene with a bandaged head and everything and shouts, oh, Superman. And then he goes, what? If you're there, who's this kind of thing? And Rampage is growing bigger and bigger. Yeah. But yeah, he soaks up the energy and takes it into space. And that's it, really. Yeah.
Everything I think she sold. Shows up later. I think that character comes back. Faulkner comes back as Rampage, that she can change, I guess.
Yeah. What, during Byrne's run? Or...
No. They just bring that character later. Back. Yeah. It's just not a one and done kind of character. She can come back as.
Yeah. Oh, which is good because the way the story runs here, it's like, you know, crisis over and that's it. Yeah. Yep. She becomes just her ordinary self again and everything's fine. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good story.
Yeah, it's again. A lot of those are kind of one and done.
Yeah.
Supermans are, you know, you get to see Superman and through the story, you get to see, kind of explore his powers, you get to explore his gallery of characters and things like that. Yeah. So a lot of them are just kind of, or the villain, you get to see the villain. So it's a lot of one and done kind of stuff in those early issues.
Yeah, and it's got good action, and it's got that twist in it as well. Because as you say, for a while you believe that this is Lois in a sort of transformed form, and then it turns out it's not Lois Lane. But yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah, it's and the artwork's good. It's that early,
Superman
stuff. Cool. All right, Kirk.
All right, I'm going to spread my interest around just a bit. Instead of concentrating on the same series over and over again, this one is an Avengers issue. I'm not certain of the number, but it's part of the Yesterday Quest, so I'm going to guess that it's probably about 185, 186. This is basically a part of a three-part series that Byrne did, or that he at least drew. And this was where Cathayon takes over the Scarlet Witch on Wundagore Mountain. But the part that I really liked was the flashback to try to explain whose children Wanda and Pietro are. Quicksilver has been injured and is being nursed back to health by a shadowy figure who describes to him how she has taken care of two infants that were abandoned or adopted, left in her care at least, and it is implied that they are Wanda and Pietro, that this shadowy figure has cared for them, that she's been the midwife for their delivery, and that in fact she is Bova, a cow, a human cow. And that's a big reveal at the end of that issue. And I've always thought that was a masterful reveal at the end because I didn't know where this story was going. And they played around with whether or not Wanda and Pietro are Magneto's kids or Wanda, Frank, and the Wizard, or, you know, whose kids are they? And I don't know that it really makes any difference anymore. But I have my opinion. But Marvel will change their mind depending on what their marketing department tells them they have to do. Are they mutants or are they inhumans? I don't care anymore. But this issue I thought was particularly well done. It was a high point of Marvel. And so that's.
I think it's 186. I think it's 186. Is the 186?
We're thinking that 186 for that.
It's got Wanda on the front, kind of being held by Mordred. Is that. That's the cover that I'm looking at now for 186. Okay. And it's got a flashback in it where Magna is who's pregnant arrives. So I think that's and Bova is in it. So that's probably the issue you're referring to.
Yep.
Knights of the Wundagore.
Yeah. I think the Bova reveal is at the end of 185.
Right.
Okay.
And then it moves into the story. Yeah, the backstory is in 186. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are more gaps in my. I've got those issues, I think, but I don't think I've read them. So it's more gaps in my Avengers.
More homework reading. For Tim. Let me make a note of it.
Just read everything. Yeah.
when I try to find time to read everything.
I enjoyed that story, the Wundagore. Story,
that was plotted by David Michelini, which is Mark Grunwald, the ones that kind of came up with that.
Yeah, and it had been kind of suggested that Magneto might be the father in earlier issues, I think.
Well, it wasn't established in the...
There was something in X-Men 125.
Yeah.
123.
Yeah.
125. Yeah.
Yeah, right about when there.
When he's looking at, some older films of his wife, yeah.
Oh, a little side story. I probably mentioned this on the Facebook page when I saw that, so forgive me if I'm hammering this twice, but have you ever seen the original movie Rollerball with James Caan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a sequence that's virtually identical, or that Byrne may have been inspired by.
Interesting.
For that eraser of the tape, looking at the memories and seeing your old lost love and deleting it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, my final issue is, and I probably had this on some other list, but mine is OMAC number one, Past Imperfect. First issue of the 4-part black and white deluxe format that Byrne did. Brian and I have covered this in an early, early episode, I think episode 5 or 6. It was a long time ago. But if you haven't read OMAC, then you owe it to yourself if you're a Byrne fan. Because, one, it's black and white. Artwork is beautiful. The story is very complex. Sometimes you have to read it a couple times to kind of get the idea of it. There's a lot of time travel going on. But the first issue where you get introduced to OMAC and the way how that world works with Brother Eye and his regeneration and these big mechanical walkers that he's fighting, it's more adult because there's a lot of blood and guts. This is not probably Comic Code approved. And it's and their 8th issue is probably 40 pages or maybe. It's a big Baxter bound book. I don't think they've ever collected these in a trade paperback. I think if you want them, you have to buy the issues themselves. And this is the one that uses a lot of duotone. Brian and I talked about this. It's a special paper that when you paint on it, is that right? You paint on it, it's almost like using Zip-A-Tone, but it's a little, it's nicer than Zip-A-Tone. But, and this is, it's a Jack Kirby creation. So it's some of that crazy Jack Kirby stuff that he did. You know, OMAC is one man army corps, but Byrne expands upon it. And also, it's kind of a reimagining and also a sequel to Kirby's original run on the book. But it's well worth it. If you're a Byrne fan, if you're a Jack Kirby fan, if you just love gorgeous artwork, then I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you recommended me to this last year because,
you had read it?
It must have come up, and I said, yeah, I'd not read it. And you said, you must read this.
Yeah.
And so I found it online, and I read it just the once. So I thought, yeah, I need to read this because everybody's raving about the artwork and everything. And yeah, the artwork is, yeah, it's very, very nice. It's in black and white, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I thought it was good, yeah. Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Have you read this, Kirk?
No, I'm familiar with it, and I may own a copy of one or two, but as it was coming out, I think the distribution in my local comic shops was spotty. It kind of caught me off guard, and so I never bought the whole thing. If I have it, I've not read it. I was not familiar with Kirby's series when he did, what's it called, OMAC, The World That's Coming, or mm-hmm. The World Yet to Come, something like that. It was a little out there. It wasn't mainstream superhero. I didn't really engage with Kirby's Fourth World or his solo projects that he was doing for DC, so I didn't. The answer is no.
It's kind of up there with Commandy. It's kind of yeah, its own little world, and it's crazy. Mm. Kirby off the hook, but I think you can, like Nigel said, I think you can read it for free. You can find it.
Yeah.
Mm. It doesn't cost anything because you can't. I know when we covered this, I actually had to go and buy, because I couldn't find my copies. I had to go actually buy the four issues online so I could read them, because I couldn't find them digitally. And then after we did the show, I think I'd mentioned them to Luke, Jack, and Eddie, and said he was interested in reading them, so I just sent them to him. So, hey, you can have my copies, read them. But you can find them in dollar bins pretty cheap. They're never expensive. And all the covers are, they're all black with just a yes. black and white cover, a character. And then just the and then a single color for the logo. So it's.
Is the logo printed vertically or to one side?
It runs vertically up the left side of the page.
That's what I remember.
Yeah.
And I think that was confusing me. I don't recall who all the characters were, but there's this like Buddy Blank, and there's Omac, and there's somebody else. And I didn't know who these characters were, so it didn't really grab me.
I didn't know anything about it. And
they were pricey when they came out, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, they were about $7 a book.
Jeez, see, that's why I probably shied away. Yeah. An unproven, untested concept. Well,
there's no ads. There's no ads, and I think they were 30 or 40 pages each. So it's dense, and like I said, there's no advertising in it, but and it probably wasn't newsstand. It was more, brick and mortar comic stores.
Direct market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Nigel, your final.
All right. Yeah, my final one, which I have substituted in. A bit of a light-hearted one, this one. I've gone for the Sensational She-Hulk number 37. So this is after Byrne came back to She-Hulk again. He came back from issue 31, I believe it was. And so just a few into his run. And the cover of the issue sports Wolverine and the Punisher and Spider-Man all charging forward, and the Punisher's blasting away with some sort of like mega gun, and Spidey's there and Wolverine with his claws drawn. And it says, "The Wolverine, the Punisher and Spider-Man starring on this issue." And then She-Hulk's popping up from the bottom, saying, "But you'll notice nothing is said about them actually being in this issue," which they're not. They're not in it at all. But the thing I like about is this is the storyline is kind of a throwback to an old, I think it's Tales to Astonish or Astound, something like that. The one that used to have Giant Man in.
Tales to Astonish.
Tales to Astonish.
Yeah. Because it's called The Big Rub Out, and it's about it's the living eraser. and the first picture, the splash page, it's more or less the same one as they did, I think, for the cover with the Giant Man story, where the eraser's there moving his arms about and She-Hulk's disappearing. She's got like a cross where she's disappeared. You can't see the middle of her body. And then it goes into the story from there, because, of course, she's sort of telling the story as it's happening. Yeah, because she says, "Hey, stop this. Are you nuts? Do you think people buy this book for the stories?" Because he's rubbing her out, and she's wearing like a nice, like, little tight little black dress and everything. Anyway, she goes back. She tells the story from going back in time to she's out with Wyatt Wingfoot. Yeah. And, it's just, yeah. I liked the humor in these when Byrne was doing it. Everybody's... Yeah, sorry.
I was saying, I think the cover is... In reference to this is the time when Marvel was putting Wolverine or the Punisher and in or on everything to boost sales.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
And Spidey had at this point, I think three books of his own. So he was in everything. So
yeah, at least that was. Yeah. So they were the main guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just poking fun at the marketing department.
Yeah.
Yeah. Surprised Venom's not on the cover.
It's a bit before Venom's time, isn't it? Maybe not. No,
but he may not have become popular by then.
Yeah. And then anyway, it goes back. They go back to Jen's place and they're getting ready to go out. And then Wyatt disappears. And then she walks into the main room and looking for him. And the living eraser's there and he erases her and then follows her through because it takes them to Dimension Z, which is where these little green guys come from. And the king has basically kidnapped her because he wants her to be his wife. And apparently all the women in that Dimension Z, they look like the She-Hulk. They're tall, green women with long green hair. But of course they're a bit sort of docile and he wants somebody... He thinks that she's more glamorous and fantastic than they are, but they look exactly like her. So she's just like messing around with them for a bit. And he's saying, you know, you're going to marry me. And she says she's not. So he says, yeah, but I've got your boyfriend here as my prisoner. So.
Well, this also, the blank pages that are in this.
Yeah.
She helped mentions Alpha Flight number 6.
Yeah.
She did that.
Yeah, just coming up to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She basically frees Wyatt easily because this guy comes up to her, this short guy with the armor on, and says, stop, unhand the king, otherwise, you know, I won't be responsible for your continued safety. And she just says, oh, get real, and boots him across the page and then frees Wyatt and they make a run for it. And then they find out where the eraser is to get his erasing things on his hands. And She-Hulk tries to use them, thinking, oh, it must be easy. He just waves his hand about. And that's when the pages all go blank. So you've got 1, 2, 3, you've got 3 pages of total blank, and then another one that's blank, but you can hear She-Hulk on the other side. She's bumped into the back of the page, and then she rips it open, and she's saying, are you trying to get my book cancelled? You know half the fans hated this gag when you did it in Alpha Flight. And so she rips through, and then they come through even more on the next page, and then she says, right, that's that, and then she realises they've got no backgrounds. So she asks him, I want my backgrounds. So he makes this crate appear. And she goes, oh, very droll. And then she asks for the whole apartment and everything back with the black borders. And then you turn to the last page and everything is back to normal again. And Wyatt says, how can we be certain everything's back? So she walks out onto the balcony and says, oh, yeah, New York, New York. It's a heck of a town. But it looks exactly like it did in She-Hulk 2. You know, when the toe, and that wasn't the real New York. That was like a Mysterio special effect. So, you know, it might not.
I never caught that. That's good.
Yeah, so it might not be New York. And then that's it. It ends where they say, oh, well, let's go and see the show. Oh, no, they've missed the show. They said, let's go and have the meal at the restaurant that they made a reservation for. And that's it. But I really
missed that relationship with Wyatt. Yeah. I always thought they were perhaps Marvel's most perfect couple. I didn't see it coming, and I don't think it was ever intended, but I think it really worked under Byrne.
Yeah.
Well, She-Hulk, the character, blossomed under Byrne. And
yes.
Why they didn't think of bringing in White Wingfoot in the She-Hulk TV show, I don't know. I think that could have helped that show out tremendously. But yeah,
well, I thought, maybe there'll be a second season. I've heard rumors, but I haven't heard anything confirmed.
Well, I heard she's going to be in one of the Avengers movies. She might. Maybe depends how she's received there. Maybe she'll get her own show again. I don't know. That's all up in the air, I think. It's a good pick. Good pick, Nigel. And I've said this before. I like the artwork and all the She-Hulk stuff. I think I just got a little tired of when this kind of humor and all the issues where she was constantly addressing the audience or breaking the fourth wall. That it got a little old. And so if he did it occasionally, a little less, but I understand thought, that's what the book was about.
Yeah, I thought he mixed the humor with a decent kind of story, if you like, even though it was all silly.
Yeah.
It did have sort of some serious parts in it, whereas when Byrne was not doing the book, when he went off it for a while and other people were doing it, it were just silly. I never read it when Byrne was not doing it.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I got the first couple of issues when he stopped because I didn't realize he wasn't coming back. You know, I thought, oh, it's just a fill-in and he'll be back next time and then next one. And then I realized he's not coming back. I think there was something in the letters page that suggested that was it. And I thought, oh, that's... So I cancelled the book. And even when he did come back originally, I don't know. I think I missed it and I wasn't in a position to get it. So I didn't get them again straight away.
Yeah, you forgot that you'd come back.
I bought the trade when the John Byrne the Return, so I've got them all in the trade paperback.
So which issues was Byrne on? 1 through 8, and then he returned 31,
and then 31 to 46, and then 48 to 50, and I believe it ran up to 60, didn't it, altogether? So no, the last no, 10.
I can't left after 60.
Yeah, the last 10 are not Byrne either. And the last one, the 51, it was more like a changeover story.
Mm-hmm.
And in which, supposedly she kills John Byrne in that. She throws him out the window. Of the Marvel offices.
All right.
It's up to you, Kirk.
For my final selection?
Your final one, yes.
All right. We're almost at 90 minutes here, so I'm going to make this short and sweet. I'm going to break my own rules, and I'm going to go back to a series that I've already mentioned because I think it's just such a good story. It's not a done-in-one. Unfortunately, but Alpha Flight number 28, I believe, the payoff of the Omega Flight fight, where the big reveal comes. Well, in fact, I think it's the issue after the big reveal that Guardian never was back, that Guardian, in fact, has been impersonated by, I don't think I'm spoiling anything here, it's a 40-year-old comic book. What's the robot's name?
Courtney Delphine.
Okay, so the big reveal is that she's been impersonating him all along and that this has all been manipulative to set up Heather and Alpha Flight once again. And then from stage left comes Madison Jeffries, who nobody knows because he hasn't been talked about, he hasn't been introduced. He hasn't been fully realized, but he has the ability to bend or manipulate metal. And that's the one thing that she fears. And so this issue contains the sequence where she's running for her life with the ragtag remains of Omega Flight. They get outside into the parking lot, and one by one, the cars come alive and start attacking the various members of Omega Flight, either killing them or maiming them or taking them off the board until finally there's nobody left except for Courtney and Madison, who basically turns her inside out. And I thought it was so brilliant. It was so moving, so dramatic.
She kind of throws up her insides, what? Doesn't she? She kind of throws up her insides.
Yeah, yeah. She vomits her insides out, and at some point she either collapses or freezes. He never really shows you, but he turns her inside out, and she's met her match, and that's the end. I don't believe she has ever returned, as she shouldn't. A couple of the members of Omega Flight are dead. A couple of the members of Omega Flight are reforming. Diamond Lil is one. And basically the series just kind of takes, wait a minute, hold it. Let's take a 5-minute pause here in the last 3 or 4 pages. Heather goes into the bath, draws a hot bath. She sinks into it, and she's soaking with a washcloth over her face saying, phew, have we been through the ringer? When the lights go off, and she has to jump up and get dressed and run down to the lab, and what do we discover? But sure enough, Box and somebody else are fishing for a new body for Walter Linowski through the portal into the Nexus, and they've hooked none other than the Hulk. So this is the famous crossover issue where they swap books, swap creative teams. The Hulk comes back from the Nexus where he's been abandoned for at least a year. In his book, and he returns to Earth, and Byrne jumps from Alpha Flight to Hulk
for about a year. And Bill Mantlo goes to Alpha Flight. Yes. This is also a Secret Wars 2. This is also a Secret Wars 2 tie-in.
I seem to recall the Beyonder on the cover.
Yeah,
is that last issue, or is that the one before? I don't recall, but...
No, it's the 28th, get the Beyonder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Byrne, when he appeared at the Mid-Ohio Con in Mansfield, stood up on stage, and I believe he was auctioning off part of whatever the fundraising auction was. He had a couple of pages from Secret Wars 2, issue 4. And he says, okay, we got a couple of pages here where the Beyonder basically trashes Alpha Flight. What am I bid? And nobody bid. He said, oh, come on, this is Shooter's masterpiece. You want to bid on this. And nobody wanted to bid because it was so obviously just a barnacle, an add-on that he was told, you will have a crossover and you will include the Beyonder in your storyline. And so he did as he was told, and then he left.
Yep.
So I'll get off my soapbox now. That's my fifth.
It's an interesting. Well, it's an interesting just the way it does brings the Hulk back. The fact that the two creative groups swap books, and this is leads right into his short run on the Hulk. And I think I may stay in Alpha Flight a little bit after this, but then
No, we didn't. No, we did. 28 was my last issue.
Was it your?
I wish I had stopped. In my humble opinion, when they collected these into the Alpha Flight series into 3 trade paperbacks, the first 12 issues, the next, 12 issues, maybe they're 10 issues a piece. I can't recall, but basically there were 3 of them. In my opinion, I have always felt that what they should have done is they should have reprinted the, not the issue as it exactly was, but they should have collected it right to the point where Heather takes her bath and lays down with the washcloth on her head and is soaking. My opinion is they should have added a little bit of artwork where there's a picture, a framed picture of Mac on the edge of the bathtub. And that's where they should have stopped the issue, stopped the reprint, and just said, and that's the end of our tale for today. You want to see the rest of it, the rest, you can go get the rest of the Alpha. You follow what I'm saying? They should have addressed the fact that that's the pause. That's the beat where the story should have ended. But the rest of it is nothing more than mechanics to swap creative team. Now, I know it flies in the face of reason. When you reprint an issue, you don't mess around with the artwork or you don't change what was published in theory. But I think this one would have supported just a final issue, a final next issue box or panel with maybe drawn on the back of that photo or something. But just a tribute to Mac and a pause to catch your breath. And that's the end of Byrne's run, in my humble opinion.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, that's a...
I'm off my soapbox now.
Well, that's a nice little segue into a little plug we'll do here that we will be covering Alpha Flight soon. I don't know when, but soon, possibly, you know, obviously next year. But we are going to be covering it the way we covered... way Nigel and John are covering Hidden Years and the way Kirk and I covered Namor. We will cover it sequentially. You know, we're going to cover it issue at a time. And we've covered the X-Men issues already leading up to it. So next time we do Alpha Flight, it'll be issue one, and we'll carry on from there. Look for that in the future.
Any final comments?
Good one and done issue. I think it's kind of overshadowed by the drama around it of Byrne leaving the book and the him dealing with having to being forced to deal with the Beyonder and things like that. So I think that overshadows it quite a bit. But it's a good it was a clever way to bring the Hulk back, I thought.
I have mixed feelings.
But do you want to keep him?
I mean, I liked it when it happened. I thought the next issue was going to be wonderful, and then when they actually switched creative teams, I couldn't stand it. And I wish that I'd taken a page from Nigel's book and just quit. But I didn't. I kept buying through at least issue 50, hoping that it was going to get better.
Yeah.
And there were one or two stories that were gems. There are also one or two characters that should have never seen the light of day. But I'll get off my soapbox now.
Yeah. Save that. Save that. That. Yeah, save there that were, for when we cover Alpha Flight.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there were only... I only bought one more issue of Alpha Flight after that, and that was... There was a crossover with Avengers when Namor married Marina.
Yes.
And so that's the only other one I got because it was part of that story.
Well, that was smart.
I think what the... This would be my only soapbox comment. I think the... What I liked about Alpha Flight was the Canadian-ness of the series. That it embraced them as being Canadian heroes. And it took place in Canada. And it had a lot of Canadian mythos and mystic stuff about it. Mm-hmm. And when other writers came on board, they were just another superhero group. And they kind of lost that essence of them being Canadian. So,
right. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, as you've mentioned, Kirk, we have been going on for about an hour and a half. So any final words before you kind of wrap up what we're doing here?
Merry Christmas to us all.
Yes, everyone from Third Degree Burn would like to wish everybody a happy holiday and a Merry Christmas, or however you celebrate the season. Everybody be safe, enjoy your family, eat some good food, and just relax. The world's stressful enough as it is. We need some time off to take it easy.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
For Third Degree Burn, I'm Kirk Greenfield.
I'm Nigel Spink. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. And I am Tim Elliott. Thanks for listening.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late. Traffic was a bear. So I'm ready. I got my list and I'm ready to go. Guys?
Guys?
What am I supposed to do now?
Where's your Christmas spirit? That's better.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.